Welcome. My name is Magdalena Surma. I'm the Program Editor of Global Horizons at the NATO Association of Canada. Today I have the great honor of interviewing Mr. Jeff Hull. He is one of the best investors in the world. He was recognized by the Business Times as the Investor of the Decade. Mr. Hull is also a Senior Financial Advisor at Manulife Securities Incorporated. Thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy day to meet with me today, Mr. Hull.
My pleasure.
I would like to begin by asking you the following question. As an investment expert, what is the best advice that you can provide to the students who are currently studying international relations and affairs, however, are interested in perhaps pursuing a career in finance?
Okay. One of the most important things to do is just read. That's the most important by far. The more you can read on various topics, the more you can kind of feed your mind and for the future that way. And one of the other keys is to do as much traveling as you can. Get that global seasoning from actually traveling the globe, seeing the cultures, being involved with things. But back to the business side and maybe something within the investment realm is try to find some role models, someone that's kind of done it before, that's already blazed the trail. So you don't have to kind of find it out in your own in the fog. Try to find someone that's already done it or a group of people that have done it, whether it's professors at university or people outside of academia, people within the business world. And often a lot of business leaders are very generous with their time, that they'll donate to people that want to come in for 15, 20 minutes to have a quick chat about something to help kind of steer them on track. It's great to have role models. And part of that secret is finding out the recipe. Just like if I went to eat dinner at a friend's house and they had this amazing dish that they served, I said, you know what, you know, can you tell me exactly how you did that great recipe? And they write out the amount of oven temperature and the amount of time, and they write it all out exactly and the ingredients exactly. If I replicate that recipe exactly like they've done it, I'll get the same result. So one of the important things for business students is to kind of look for role models out there that have kind of blazed a trail where they want to head, and then find out how they did that. And by copying it, you can kind of almost slide through a lot of the areas of difficulty a lot of other people receive, and you don't step on the same landmines and trying to figure things out. Smart people learn from the mistakes of others rather than doing it themselves that way. But it's a great area, and I'm sure anybody that wants to pursue that field will do very well.
What are some of the most rewarding and challenging aspects associated with your job as a financial advisor with Manulife Securities Incorporated?
Well, I think probably one of the greatest rewards is just the benefit clients receive. And my clients have been with me, some of them, for 25 years, so I've seen their kids grow up and go on to things like Harvard and other places thanks to a lot of the financial things I've done for them over the years, and kind of be a part of the clients' lives and help kind of shape their destiny that way. It's a great reward when you can take care of something like someone's finances, which is usually very close to them and very important that way. Challenging, the investment world is always a challenge. Every day you get up, you turn on the news, and there's some new lunacy out in the world that's happening, some apocalypse du jour of the day that's happened, whether it's issues in the States or globally with Putin or whatever's happening in the world. So there's a lot of opportunity that's out there that kind of shapes the day. So probably the most challenging is every day you get up and it's a different day that way. The other thing, strangely, is actually the news media. Often they don't do a lot of the deep dives they should on information, and they're all competing with each other for sensationalized headlines. So what happens is every day a client will get down, they'll watch their TV or turn it on, all they see is disaster.
That's true.
The media only reports on the planes that crash. They don't report on the millions of planes that land safely every month. So it kind of shapes the psyche of investors. So part of a role of a good financial advisor is to help kind of handhold that client through the tough times and to keep them focused on the areas that they need to focus on, which is their greater goals, and to keep heading towards those goals and not get distracted by the news media or the headline du jour of the day that can often distract investors in that way.
For those who are interested in perhaps investments, what would you say are the best things for someone to consider who's a young professional and perhaps is thinking about investing in the future?
Well, probably one of the most important things, again, is back to the beginning, which is just read as much as they can. But the big thing, again, in picking a role model like we've spoken about, that's also really important. So, for instance, one of my role models was Warren Buffett. I had the privilege to meet Warren a number of times and did some documentaries on him. So I learned a lot from him, his family, his colleagues. So by having a role model, someone's already done it, it kind of helps, again, clear that pathway. But as an investor also, a lot of people want to do it on their own. We're in the information age. We're in the social media generation where people think, everything's at their fingertips with a click away on a mouse. The challenge is the investment world is a really deep pool. And a lot of people trying to go it alone and do it on their own it's like trying to cut your own hair. It's not a good idea. Not a good idea. I wouldn't do self-surgery. I wouldn't cut my own hair.
No.
So even being a young person, is trying to find a financial advisor that's willing to work with a young person that's kind of up and coming to kind of be their spirit guide through the whole process of this lunacy called the financial world that's got ups and downs. And really, a good financial advisor also helps people define what their target is and to help stay on course and not get distracted off that target. So that's probably one of the keys for someone young looking to invest. The other thing is to have a plan and then stick to the plan. It's so easy nowadays to get distracted. If it's not with the news media scaring people out of investments, it could be, you know, commercials on television telling people they got to have this greatest, newest product or service. Being young in the world, you want to have all these great things. There's all these materialistic kind of commercials that are bombarding people thousands of times a day. It's really the ability to define what your needs are versus emotions. And I find that people kind of buy things based on emotion and justify with logic. It's like, well, I really need that new car because if I buy a new one, not a used one, they don't have to have repairs. Well, no, really, it's often better to buy the used car. You know, that's 3 years old, that's already depreciated. Let somebody else have the depreciation on their car, not you. And then, so these are the kind of little steps and things that a financial advisor can help guide someone with. But having a plan and sticking to it, most people don't plan to fail. They just fail to plan. And that's one of the biggest challenges that a lot of, especially young people, have in that way. And the other thing really is it's chess versus checkers. A lot of the public students are doing really well playing checkers. They don't realize they're on a chessboard. And when they're competing against, you know, multi-billion dollar conglomerates and banks and institutions that have, you know, millions of dollars of just computer systems that can think in a blink of an eye, it's not a fair competition. So kind of aligning yourself with a great financial advisor that has the tools, the Rolodex of great contacts there to help you, whether it's accountants, lawyers, all the things you might need to help you on your journey, it's a great way to kind of build your own team.
As you mentioned, you've worked with Warren Buffett, and you hosted the first two authorized biographies on billionaire superstar investor Mr. Warren Buffett. Would you be able to discuss the impact of those biographies that were released?
Well, first of all, the one nice thing was really nice is the Buffett family was very gracious and nice to me in allowing me to, you know, film Warren and interviews and his family, his kids, his grandkids, his colleagues. The family was great. We actually donated the documentaries for various charities. So when the tsunami happened in India a number of years ago, I donated the whole documentary to Global Television, which then played those ads. We ran them for World Vision as an example. So we took all the commercial time and gave that away. His daughter was involved with the charity, so I gave the DVDs away to that charity as well. So it was really nice to do a biography. I actually learned a lot even just through that process. And like I said, great man, but also a good role model, not just for myself, but all kinds of investors around the world. Many different languages that follow kind of what he does, how he does it. I find him very fascinating. I had the privilege to meet him back when I was about 21 years old, when I first met him. So over the years, when I've had an opportunity to meet with him, it's been fantastic. He has a great meeting in Omaha every year, which is an annual meeting for his company, Berkshire Hathaway. Nowadays, you get tens of thousands of share owners that come out to these meetings. It's rather remarkable. And the knowledge he shares is invaluable to investors of all ages. Actually, a lot of university students actually do attend those annual meetings and get some fantastic insights from Warren. And he's in his later 80s now, so he's not going to be here forever. So it's a real cherished treat when a lot of the university students have that opportunity to hear from Warren.
I would certainly be interested in attending, and I'm certain that a lot of our listeners today would be interested in obtaining more information about how they would be able to attend. What would you advise for those who are interested to do in terms of...
Well, the only requirement to actually attend, besides being able to get to Omaha,
yes.
which if you can avoid the tornadoes is a real treat, is you have to be an owner of Berkshire Hathaway, which is Buffett's company. But nowadays, in the yesteryears when I first bought my first shares, they were over $8,000 a share. Now they're around $200,000 a share. But now he's had smaller shares where they've split the stock in some of the Class B shares. So now a lot of people can actually afford the shares for a very, very tiny amount. And as long as someone has just one share, it gives them the right as a share owner to attend that annual meeting and get the insights from Warren. And he speaks with his business partner, Charlie Munger, usually on stage for anywhere from about 5 hours to 6 hours. And it's remarkable the insights that people can gain from that. So as a one tip or trick for new people wanting to learn about the investing world or get into business or finance or just hear from someone that's not just a genius on the investing world, but also on business insights. And even talks about family and family insights and social responsibility and charitable initiatives. It's rather remarkable. So it's a good opportunity for students to have that opportunity when they get it.
I think I'll be buying a share. Mr. Hull, as the director and the board member of the NATO Association of Canada, would you be able to discuss the impact of NATO?
Well, there's a couple of things. Obviously, the impact of NATO has been so important as an organization itself, the military organization, because obviously it started to really curb and stop Russian aggression at its infancy. Many, many decades later, we seem to be back on the same doorstep again of stopping Russian aggression. But what it's really done is allowed member countries to join forces and collectively be stronger and smarter and militarily a lot more elite in the ability of them to react to things around the globe, especially on behalf of each other. Obviously, lately there's been the horrible attacks in France, which has had significant impact. Obviously, they're a NATO member, and that's one of the things where NATO can come into play. Member countries can all communicate among each other and help each other in that way. On the association side, which obviously I'm one of the board of directors of the NATO Association of Canada, it's been actually a real privilege for myself because it's given me an increased access to a number of those within the academic field, within the military currently and former military, as well as other colleagues in the commerce and business world as well. It's a real collective mix of an array of people with varying and differing backgrounds. It's just fascinating. And I've also had the privilege to travel on behalf of and with the NATO Association of Canada as well, whether it was to Turkey, Albania, Macedonia, and there's a lot of things I learned. Like one of the simple things I learned that's made a big impact, and I actually share this story with a lot of my clients, when I was in Macedonia with a group called the Macedonian Wolves, which is like kind of their version of a SEAL team, we're talking about a village in Afghanistan, and one of these villages was fairly American-friendly. And the Americans, and this is before they'd caught Bin Laden, and they thought this village was, you know, kind of key in a key tribal region, and they wanted to keep it American friendly. And they happened to notice one day when they were in the village that the women of the village were traveling 10 kilometers by foot to go get water and 10 kilometers back. And the Americans thought, you know what, this would be a great gesture of ours. Why don't we just spend $3,500 in equipment? Why don't we drill a well right in the middle of the village here? They get water here, we'll look good. They'll look good. We have a little ribbon cutting, and they actually did this, what they appeared to have as a good deed. A few weeks later, they hadn't really heard from that village, which was a little bit unusual because it was pretty American-friendly, so they went back to check on the village. And what they learned and were kind of surprised at is the entire well they had drilled had been completely sabotaged and destroyed. So who do you think destroyed the well? Some people would guess the Taliban. That was my first guess.
It's difficult. Yeah, that would be...
Yeah, do you know who destroyed the well?
Tell me.
The women of the village destroyed the well.
Why did they destroy it?
Because what the Americans had unwittingly robbed them of was their 10-kilometer walk every day. It wasn't seen as work. It was their free time away from their husbands, who many of them had been married off to, and it was girl chat time. It was their time to get together with the other women of the village to have that 10-kilometer walk where they can chat and catch up with each other, to go fetch water and bring it back for the village. So what in the Western world would appear to be a labor and it'd be arduous, nobody want to walk, you know, 10 kilometers to Loblaws to get water and carry it back, to that part of the world, that was normal. It was actually something they looked forward to. So often the West too often jumps to conclusions and doesn't take a moment to ask what another country needs. And that's one of the things that I learned, not just on that trip, but on many, is that sometimes it's best to ask a community what they really need and to appreciate that there's very distinct cultural differences that can make a very big difference in how we can relate to charitable giving, how we can relate to assisting other nations, and most importantly, just understanding other cultures and blending with that and appreciating that it is a different part of the world. There's different cultures, religions, and to be able to kind of adapt appropriately with that is absolutely key for success in keeping those things moving forward.